Hello and welcome to Places to Sleep. My name is Sarah, and every episode I will be reading from a different book the descriptions of different places. This will be a backdrop for you to relax and drift off to sleep. For this episode, I will be reading some excerpts from Waterdeep Dragon Heist by Wizards of the Coast. The Sea Ward. The Sea Ward stands proud on the high ground above Mount Waterdeep's sunset shadow. The rich and the powerful, or those who wish you to think such of them and can afford the rent, reside or run their businesses here. When the warlords and pirates of early Waterdeep gained enough gold, they built fortresses on what used to be fields of grass tousled by sea wind. You can still see the remains of some of those old castles incorporated into the palatial homes of the noble families that dwell in the Sea Ward. For the best all-round view of the glittering homes enshrouded by garden walls, go to where Diamond Street and Delzoran Street cross, nigh to Mistra's House of Wonder, and simply spin in a circle. Blue and gold are the Sea Ward's colors in competitions, and the ward's mascot is the sea lion, a fanciful combination of fish and feline. There's a persistent but patently false legend that the famous lion gate at the Field of Triumph is the gaping maw of a sea lion. The architectural designs for the gates show this to be false, however, and they can be viewed in the map house, the guild hall of the Surveyor's Map and Chartmaker's Guild in the Castle Ward. Must-see locations in the Sea Ward begin, of course, with the Field of Triumph, but just across the street is the no less remarkable House of Heroes, the largest temple in the city. Dedicated to Tempest, its many grand halls celebrate the city's champions of both battle and sport. The winners of ward competitions are paraded here after their victories, often carried on shoulders or passed from hand to hand over the heads of a crowd. It is a sight you shouldn't miss. You should also visit the House of Wonder. This is surely the most splendid temple dedicated to the gods of magic, with Mistra foremost among them, of course, in all the world. Although your eye will be drawn to ornate towers, brilliant mosaics, and magical displays, look also for the humble violets growing amid the ostentation. These delicate flowers were Argyron's favorite, and they are planted about the temple in memory of him. Two other temples in the ward are as impressive, but in different ways. The beauteous House of the Moon has the tallest tower of any temple in the city, rising some 75 feet above the street. At its top, priests of Saloon bask in the light of the moon in all seasons. The House of Inspired Hands, dedicated to Gond, presents an altogether less peaceful experience. Here, all the great innovative minds of the city invent and experiment, attempting to create everything from flying machines to stronger door hinges. But don't expect a museum of marvels, such as can be found in Baldur's Gate. At this site, worship is work, as anyone at the temple is liable to tell you. If you're looking for some good fortune, you should surely visit the Tower of Luck, a temple complex dedicated to Timora. The tower in question is actually a many-pillared atrium, ingeniously roofed over with glass. Beneath the roof, a bronze sculpture of a diminutive Timora depicted as a laughing young girl appears to be leaping from the very top of an astounding fountain. To pay your respects and make a wish, you come around to the fountain on a walkway and toss your coin to Timora. Managing to land it in her outstretched hand is a sure sign of her favor. If you need to refresh yourself during your travels, or perhaps to primp before an important meeting or a night out, visit Soon's Faithful at the Temple of Beauty. Its marbled public baths and mirrored salons are open from before dawn to after dusk. There's no fee for these services, or for the advice and aid of the temple's many pleasant attendants. donations are encouraged. Two parks in the Sea Ward might also be worth your time. The Shrines to Nature, just a block away from the Tower of Luck, are resplendent gardens dedicated to nature gods like Miliki and Sylvanas. The park is closed to all except residents of the Sea Ward. Yet, from behind the iron fence that surrounds it, you can catch glimpses of the superb shrines, statues, and fountains within. The Hero's Garden is the only green space in the city that is open to the public besides the City of the Dead, but it is tucked away so far to the north in the Sea Ward that it gets few visitors, which is a pity, since the fine statuary in this lush garden portrays many of the figures important to the city's history. North Ward. Nobles aplenty live in the North Ward, but the character of this ward is more peaceful than that of the Sea Ward. Though it has taverns and shops to suit a variety of tastes, the tenor of the area tends toward reserved and polite. Most streets are lined with row houses inhabited by the families of prosperous people of business, investing, and civic service. They are each wealthy enough to employ a servant or two, or they endeavor to appear as such. For the best experience in the North Ward, go there just before dawn, buy a broadsheet, and settle in at a cafe with a view of the street. Watch as the ward comes quietly to life around you. At first, it will be so silent that you'll be able to hear the resident a street over who opens her sash for fresh air and clears her throat. Then the birdsong will begin, and shortly thereafter, you'll hear and see the drays arriving with servants. These aren't the live-in staff used by noble houses, but people hired could come and work for a day. Most of them come from the less affluent parts of the city, arriving with the tools of their trade and outfitted in their customary garb. Launderers and cooks in white, chimney sweeps and house cleaners in black, valets and childminders in gray, gardeners in green, and tutors in blue. As these servants spread out to knock on doors and begin their work, the residents of the ward take their exits, parting fondly with spouses and children, their footsteps tramping along the sidewalk or taking them into rattling hire coaches. In the span of just an hour, the North Ward comes to noisy life and then settles again into quiescence, until later in the day when the process reverses itself, as residents return from work and servants leave. The liveliest, and perhaps the loveliest, part of the ward is the Cliff Watch. Here, the plateau upon which Waterdeep sits features cliffs so steep and high that the city wall is interrupted to either side of them. Some of the most lavish residences and most luxurious taverns and inns of Waterdeep stand along this place, boasting terraces and balconies that allow one to take in the beautiful sight of the countryside to the east. Yet you need not pay their high prices, for a public walkway along the cliff's edge offers pedestrians ample opportunity to enjoy the view. The North Ward's colors are green and orange, and its mascot is the gentle white dove depicted in flight. Many North Ward homes have dovecotes on their roofs, and the great flocks of the birds that circle over the city at dawn and dusk are a delight to behold. Castle Ward. The Castle Ward is the heart and mind of Waterdeep, if not its soul. It houses the city's military forces, courts, government, and the market, the largest market square of any city in the north. It encompasses the city navy's docks in the Great Harbor and all of Mount Waterdeep, and it is home to 6 walking statues, numerous temples, and many other landmarks. Castle Waterdeep stands above the city on a great bluff that extends out from the mountain, its towers soaring hundreds of feet into the sky. It surprises many to learn that this isn't where Waterdeep's rulers reside, nor where the city is governed. The castle was and is a redoubt of last defense should the city be attacked, but for well over a century, The ruler of Waterdeep has occupied the Palace of Waterdeep, also known as Paragon's Palace, and still called that by elderly and long-lived citizens, including many elves. Though not quite as large as the castle, the palace is far more comfortable and lavishly decorated, with many halls used by government officials, guildmasters, and nobles for meetings and court proceedings. If you have reason to be invited, not compelled, I should hope, to meet with the masked lords or the open lord of Waterdeep, it will likely take place in the audience chamber of the palace. There, you can witness the ancient and humble throne that Aegaeron first sat upon so long ago. Many other buildings in the ward are given over to city business, including several courts for magisters and the barracks of the city guard. So many of the ward structures are offices and meeting halls for business owners, solicitors, publishers, and the like, that the castle ward has the smallest resident population of all the wards. Many landmarks of interest are found in this ward, aside from the 6 walking statues, discussed later in this chapbook. You could hardly see them at all in a day, but the following are highly recommended. Blackstaff Tower is a squat black blot in the otherwise pretty ward, humble though the edifice may be. Looking at the place for too long can give you a queasy feeling and the sense that you are being watched, almost as though this tower itself has turned an unseen and wrathful eye upon you. Perhaps you think this fanciful. Well, go and try it yourself. On the opposite end of the mountain, close to the naval harbor, stands Mert's Mansion. Once a fortress-like and clowering tower, it has been upgraded with more delicate fashions of architecture since the return of its long-absent owner. Mert has quite a history with Durnan, the proprietor of the Yawning Portal. Together they descended into the Well, as the entrance to Undermountain was known in olden days. Waterdeep used to throw criminals in the Well, leaving them to die in Undermountain's dungeons. Durnan and Mert entered the dungeons of their own free will, and not only that, but returned laden with treasures. Both used magic to extend their lives, but they eventually parted ways. Mert kept on with a life of adventure, while Durnan built the tavern called the Yawning Portal over the Well, and now, almost 2 centuries later, charges coin to descend into it. Not a bad way to part fools from their money. The glorious Spires of the Morning, dedicated to Lathander, is one of Waterdeep's most beautiful temples, but it is rivaled in this ward by the Temple of Seldarine, dedicated to all the elf gods. The journey through Mount Melody Walk, a tunnel cut through Mount Waterdeep, to New Ullman's Academy of Music and Other Arts, is a wondrous daytime excursion. The market offers a wild array of sights, smells, and sounds in which folk might lose themselves for a 10-day. The Font of Knowledge is a temple to Ogma, yes, but also the city's largest public library. Titles written throughout the ages can be viewed here under the watchful eyes of the temple's priests. In short, if I can claim this section of the Enchiridion to be such, the castle ward offers far too many splendors to list them all here. The castle ward's colors are blue and purple, and its mascot is a griffin, typically depicted in gold. These borrow colors from the city's flag and reference the griffin cavalry, of course. Champions for the ward often come from among the ranks of the guard, the navy, or the cavalry. Although such competitors have often had the advantage in races and competitions, their crowds of rabidly cheering fans are naturally much smaller than those of the other wards. Thank you for listening to Places to Sleep. I hope that you've drifted off along the way, but if you haven't, that's okay. Sometimes, even when you can't sleep, it's nice to think about places where maybe you could.